Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our, can I even say weekly anymore, monthly? Thank you for joining us in our monthly, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very Well Armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you all. You are your community's finest with a face for radio and a voice for silent movies. My name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and host of Well Armed Radio, and encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. 563-999-3787 is the studio number. 563-999-3787 will get you into the Well Armed studio. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And this week I opened the Blog Talk Radio website, logged in. I was going to schedule the show on like Wednesday or Tuesday, and then I didn't because I was I reached out to Tim Michaels' campaign to see if he wanted to come on the show. And then so I didn't want to schedule the show if Tim Michaels was going to be on, and then I because I didn't want to make the announcement until anyway. So that then here I am on Sunday, and then I'm like, okay, well, I'm doing a show for sure this week because I haven't done a show since like the 4th of July, and I got topics I've wanted to do and stuff to talk about, and so I wanted to get back on the radio internet waves here. And then so this morning I'm like, okay, schedule the show so you can get out there on social media so people can maybe catch more live, because right now everybody catches the show. It's almost exclusively podcast. So I'm like, yeah, just I'll get it out there so everybody can catch the show, you know, maybe more live listeners tonight versus just podcast. And then I'm like, well, but I don't know if I do 9:30, what time will I get off the golf course? And then I'll be rushed, and I'll just do it when I get home. And if I get home early, then give it a couple hours soak before the show. And then here I am at 10:20 rolling in the garage, 10:25 logging on to Blog Talk, putting the show in, and then we're live. I use a different computer to log on to broadcast the show. And so all that, I get 30 seconds into before the I probably had the show up about, I logged into the studio 30 seconds before the show, and then I put it on MeWe, on the Well Armed Radio MeWe page, about 30 seconds into the intro music. So we're here. And if you're listening, you're probably listening to the podcast, and thank you for being here. So here we are. I mean, it's crazy that summer is almost gone. And I say that we've got a month. Summer's 2/3 gone. We've got a month of summer left. August is I said this last year. I remember I say this. August is like the bone marrow of summer. Cause like June in Wisconsin, it's kind of summer, kind of not summer. Half the time it's feels like summer, and the other half of time it doesn't. I'm a boater on Lake Michigan, and the Lake Michigan water is still freezing cold. So for that reason, it doesn't even feel like summer until like July. This year, it's been a really cold lake, and even July hasn't felt much like summer out there on Lake Michigan. Really cool. Last week, we had the yacht out, had some friends out for the air show. The Blue Angels were flying, and that was pretty damn cool. The only thing that wasn't cool was I should have had my Bluetooth going and had some had the Top Gun soundtrack playing. There was another boat anchored not too far from us that had it playing, but I should have had the Top Gun soundtrack playing during the air show. That would have been really, really cool. But it was cool anyway. Caught the Blue Angels, and super cool to see. It's been – here's a quick side story. I keep my boat at Skipper Bud's in Milwaukee. My boat goes in with the big travel lift. It's the 35,000-ton travel lift. And they have another forklift that I think is a 15,000-pound forklift. So they use that forklift for most boats, the dry stack. They have these huge warehouses with huge, you know, four tiers tall, where they stack boats on shelves. And they go in with a huge forklift, lift a boat off a shelf, and then drop it in the well, and boats are, and then the put it in one of the slips, and then the people come use it, and then when they're done, they pull it back out and stick it back in the warehouse. It's called a dry stack marina. My boat goes in differently with a travel lift because it's too heavy for the too large of a yacht for the forklift lift. And when I say forklift, you're picturing it's a massive forklift because it's got forks, but it's huge. It's not like a warehouse forklift that you see at the, you know, Generac or, you know, you're inside of an Amazon facility. I mean, it's a huge, huge forklift. Anyway, so Milwaukee Air and Water Show, which the water show is stupid. It's like the Milwaukee police boat, the Milwaukee sheriff's boat, and then the Milwaukee fire department boat, maybe a Coast Guard boat. They go tooling around. It's really, really dumb. The fireboat like sprays its water out of all its nozzles, and that's the extent of the water show. It's super dumb. But the air show is cool. They've got everything from like the refueling wing flies by. The 84th Air Refueling Wing, or 100th or whatever. I forget the name of it. It flies out of Mitchell. Then you've got some stunt pilots that fly, and then you've got the Blue Angels are the the main attraction. They fly at like 3 o'clock on Saturday, 3 o'clock on Sunday. And it's super cool. So they haven't had the air show in, it's been, let's see, the year before COVID, the air show got, it was either canceled from funding or it got rained out or the weather, maybe it was the year. Anyway, it's been like 4 years because there was the year before COVID, they didn't have it. And then it was canceled for COVID years twice. And then this year they had it on. And so that's 4 years since the last time that the air show actually was put on. So down at the marina, it's a super popular thing. There's boats that come up from Chicago, down from, you know, Port Washington. There's all, probably down from Sheboygan, Winthrop Harbor, Racine, Kenosha Harbors, probably even South Milwaukee Harbor, South Shore Yacht Club. Anyway, the forklift at Skipper Bud's goes down and they can't get dry stack boats off. So like one of the things that people would like, there's things people go out for on their boat. The 3rd of July fireworks, everybody takes their boat out. It's packed out there in the harbor. The Milwaukee Air Show, people take their boat out. It's packed out there. And they couldn't get their boats out because the forklift was down at Skipper Bud's. But anyway, so we had the boat out. It was a good time and had by all. Just a side note, and this is like, so the show here, I like to focus on a couple things. Well, freedom is the first thing. Freedom is the main thing. Freedom is everything. But freedom relates to other things. I mean, capitalism, that's freedom, free markets. It's part of freedom. And so capitalism, business, entrepreneurship, again, ties right into freedom. Self-defense ties right into freedom. It's all about freedom in my book. And not to get religious on you, but I mean, I think freedom is just, I mean, like even if you believe in Christianity, which I do, free will is what religion is based upon. I mean, God didn't force people to obey or follow his, you know, commandments and you get the will to decide. And, you know, if you believe in God and God is almighty and all knowing and all omniscient, and he could do anything and he could make people obey him, but he chose not to. And so he gave people that free will, the freedom to choose. And speaking of freedom to choose, I'm looking at happy birthday to Milton Friedman. It's Milton Friedman's birthday. Milton Friedman is like my economic hero. I was, I've always loved business, economics. And I always say I was a marketing major, economics minor in college, although I didn't actually get my economics minor. I was a couple credits short, but that's why I always say I was an economics minor. I was just an emphasis, a lot of economics in my coursework. I love economics. So Milton Friedman, greatest economist, I think, of all time, certainly of, I don't know what year Milton Friedman died, he was around and big during the Reagan years. I remember he's got some great clips on YouTube. If you go to watch Milton Friedman on, I think he was on the Donahue Show, and just awesome. I mean, hearing him speak, it was just spectacular. But freedom, so free markets and freedom and the freedom to choose. And like I said, even in religion, Christianity, God gave people the right. You can choose good. You can choose evil. It's, you have that choice. And if God is God and all willing and all knowing and all powerful, I mean, he could make you obey him, but he chose not to. There was something about wanting people to choose. And think about, I don't know, think about like an arranged marriage. Like there's countries, cultures where you do that, but you ultimately want someone to be with you because they choose to be, not because they have to be. And, you know, there's in business, in leadership, there's a book, in fact, I'm looking at it on my shelf. It's called The Five Levels of Leadership. A book that I've read a while back, and I can't cite them off the top of my head, but I used to, and I'd have to refresh my memory, but there's different levels of leadership, and the lowest level of leadership is leadership by authority, where people follow you, they obey because they have to, they do what you're telling them because they have to, you outrank them, you're someone's boss. And it's such a low form of leadership that actually in the book, The Five Levels of Leadership, they suggest / compel you not to use authority as a form of leadership. Now, there's times where you need authority, like in the military, you need authority. But even there, the best leadership doesn't come from authority. It comes because the other levels of leadership. I wonder if I can even grab the book here, and I don't want to get too far off on a sidetrack. Let me see if I can reach it here. What? To refresh my memory. The Five Levels of Leadership by John Maxwell. John Maxwell, is he the one that wrote, because I love, maybe it's a different book because, oh no, that's Jim Collins. Jim Collins wrote Good to Great, which is another fantastic book. But the five levels of leadership are, here we go. Position. That's the level one of leadership is position. And that's where people follow you because you have authority over them. Let's see, I've got too many notes in this book. Got to get to my... Yeah, this is real good, real good podcasting, isn't it? Okay, here you go. The five levels of leadership are position. Position is where people follow you because they have to. That's authority. Leadership by authority. And that's such a low form of leadership that they actually encourage you not to use that, not to rely on that. Permission is where people follow you because they want to. They follow you, and there's a number of reasons people follow. Some people are lazy, and they want to they let someone lead them because they're lazy. You know, that's permission. People follow you because they want to follow you. I'd say celebrities are probably like that. People would let celebrities lead them. They would follow them. They would do what they tell them to do because they want to. Which might also fall into the third level of leadership, was production, where people follow because of what you have done for. You know, in business, it's for the organization, what you've done in your life's accomplishments. People follow you because of what you've done. And then there's the upper levels are people development. People follow because of what you have done for them personally. And then the pinnacle is where people follow because of who you are and what you represent. That's the pinnacle of leadership, where, again, people follow you because of who you are, what you represent. And that could be like... I suppose like a president that you respect or something, but authority is the position is the lowest form of leadership. And so like even like God, if you believe in Christianity, gave people the right to reject him, the right to choose to do what they, you know, not to follow his commandments and not to, you know, to the free will. So there's something just basic, something fundamental about freedom. And again, freedom, I'm talking to, just to bring this full circle, we're talking back about freedom relates to religion, freedom to choose, freedom relates to economics, as a consumer, capitalism in business, the freedom to choose who to do business with and who not to. I mean, really the only place where freedom doesn't exist is government. Although a constitutional government, governments are instituted among men deriving their consent from the governed to preserve freedom. Because in order to preserve freedom, you have to anarchy is not freedom. Anarchy is in an anarchist situation, the most, you're not free. You're subservient to people who have power, strength. And that strength comes from, could be physical power. If there's no guns, no weapons, then the people who have the power are the physically strong. And too bad if you're old and frail. But then if you've got weaponry, then of course, you know, people who are older and frail could still be able to protect themselves and have freedom. So, but governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government to protect freedoms, to protect rights. So without government, you don't have rights. With a limited government, let me silence that phone, with a limited government, you have rights protected. And then, of course, you have a government that becomes too powerful, and then, you know, you lose your freedom, lose your rights. But what I'm getting at here is freedom is what it's all about. In my book, it's the essence of life. It's again, I believe freedom is the essence of religion. I believe freedom is the essence of a constitutional form of government. Freedom is the most important thing. And one of the things that how this relates to this. So when I talk about, you know, freedom and things, how this relates is the topics that I choose for the show. Capitalism relates to freedom. Self-defense, guns, firearm relates to freedom. And so I like things that represent things that chase freedom. And one of those things is, I'm going somewhere with this, is LIV Golf. I don't know if you guys, people listen to the show, you know the PGA Tour. Maybe you follow golf, maybe you don't. I love to golf. In fact, I just got done golfing today. Actually, I had my best round of the year. Shot my best 18-hole round, not my best 9-hole round. I shot 38 on the front side and 39 on the back side at Nagawaki. Just had three bad holes, one double bogey in the back, hit the ball out of, in the hazard, and then one three putt in the front. So it was about three shots from what I really should have been. Anyway, I love golf. Great sport. It's that combination of power, precision, and it's an incredible mental game. You wouldn't even believe how much of a mental game golf is. All other sports, you can get mad, get angry, and do better. It drives you. You know, basketball, you get mad and you get some adrenaline, you jump higher, run faster. Same thing with football, baseball, you get mad and you swing the bat harder and throw hard. I mean, not golf. Golf, if you start, it doesn't work like that. So anyway, where I'm going with this is LIV Golf is, so the PGA Tour is, and one thing I hate is monopolies. I hate monopolies in business. I hate monopolies in government. The government is the biggest monopoly of them all. But then you've got these professional sports leagues that operate like monopolies, like the NBA and the NFL. And of course, there's other leagues that try to get a start. You know, what do they call the football league that they were trying to start this year that they had going over the summer? I don't remember if it was the American Football League or something like that, but I don't know how well that did or didn't do, but I hate monopolies. And the PGA Tour has a monopoly on golf. There's smaller tours. There's like the Nike Tour and a couple others, but the big tour, the pros, the PGA Tour is the only place with the big purses and the big money. And I think there's some tours in other countries, of course. But then some of this is what I've inferred. Some of this is what I've heard stated. So the LIV Golf Tour is a second tour that was put together by people who keep saying it's backed by the Saudi government. The Saudi government is funding this LIV Golf Tour. You know, the rich and powerful oil sheiks over in Saudi Arabia are the ones that formed this other tour. But like Phil Mickelson is a world famous golfer. He joined the LIV Tour. And then when he did, he made some supportive comments about it a few months back. And then everybody was, he had to step away from the PGA Tour and take some time off. And but the LIV Golf Tour started picking up more and more tier one players, more and more, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, some big name golfers. And then of course the PGA Tour trying to be the monopoly that they are, people that went to play in the LIV Golf Tour, they pull their tour card. You can't play in PGA Tour events anymore, which I think is super shitty, but that's the PGA trying to protect their little fiefdom. So this is where there's a freedom angle here. I like competition and free markets, and I think we're all better off because of it. So LIV Golf Tour, now everybody's like, the Saudis are real, that's a horrible country and they do bad things. And I'm not arguing with any of that. But I mean, let's be honest. And I wouldn't have said this a couple of years ago. Look at America. I mean, look at what Fauci did. I mean, he's killed Fauci and the CDC and Democrats. I mean, they've literally killed hundreds of thousands for sure, probably millions of people with the COVID pandemic, not because they caused it, but because, you know, they, well, I think Fauci funding the gain of function research, you know, very likely did cause it. But all that notwithstanding, there was early intervention, early treatments that would have saved hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of lives. And between the media and Democrats, Fauci, they squandered it. They scuttled it and didn't allow people to get their early treatments. And so treatments that would have saved lives early on in the pandemic, when it was the strains that really hit, you know, older people, people with diabetes, heart disease. My dad died from COVID. I'm convinced my dad would, and my dad, it's, you know, my dad had type 2 diabetes. He was, didn't exercise and take care of himself. He had type 2 diabetes. I think he would have made it if he'd have gotten, you know, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine right away. But he lived in Illinois and they weren't willing to do that. And so people died because of it. And then we have a stolen, I 100% believe we had a stolen election in this country. So we make fun of other countries like Cuba when the Castro is reelected with 98% of the vote or whatever. And we just, but look at our country. We had a stolen election, stolen by Democrats. I mean, that's third world country bullshit. So, I mean, I love America. I love our constitution. I love what America stands for, our traditions. And, but right now our country is, then this isn't the people, but our country is run by radical communists, who have no respect for freedom, no respect for morality. And I'm not talking morality like religious morality. I'm talking morality like, conservatives wouldn't want to cheat to win. If they want to, they want to win elections by winning people's hearts and minds. And if we can't convince people to vote for our candidates, vote for our policies, well, then we got to do a better job of selling those policies to people. But very few conservatives want to cheat to win. I'm not saying there's not some, but liberals would. So anyway, my point being is that this country, as far as our government goes, I'm not talking about the people, because I think most people in this country still believe in freedom. Maybe it's only 60%, but I still think it's the majority. But for anybody that's going to say, oh, Saudi Arabia this, and, you know, don't do business with Saudi Arabia, I mean, look in the mirror. Look at what our country's done. And I'm not talking about the people in our country. I'm talking about the government of our country right now, this existing government. So, I'm so rooting for the LIV Golf Tour. This is the part that I infer, because I've heard some interviews with some of the PGA Tour athletes who've gone over to the LIV Golf Tour. And basically what they're saying is, like, the PGA Tour is whenever they have a tour event, it's at a city. And then there's always like a charity. Charity isn't what you think of as charity. I mean, charity is in 2022 is a way that people suck money from people to, like, the Clinton Foundation. You know, that was supposedly some kind of charity, but it's just a way that the Clintons enrich themselves under the guise of tax protections and all kinds of stuff. These PGA Tour events, they are always supporting a charity. And when I say charity, like, hell, even these quasi-charitable, like the, I don't call it this, it used to be called the Blood Center of Wisconsin, then it was like Versity or something. I don't even know what it's called anymore, but they leverage charity, they leverage volunteerism to take in a whole bunch of money, pay their administrators a whole bunch of money. It's a big money conduit. And I'm not knocking every single charity in the world, but by and large, my observations are most charities turn into money conduits. It's a way for people to make money. And so the PGA Tour has, like, every event has these charities and they get millions of dollars. They have a PGA Tour event, and they don't in Milwaukee anymore, but they used to. And then there was, you know, charities that would support. And my inference, this isn't because the PGA players that have gone to the LIV Tour have expressed some frustration slash disappointment slash criticism of the PGA Tour because they don't pay the players that much. Think about like in the NBA, NFL, you got like player minimums. If you're in the league, you're rich. There's people that are in the PGA Tour and they're make the PGA Tour successful and they're barely getting by. You know, they're driving from town to town. This isn't like the people that are winning the tournaments, but they're people that are on the tour and part of the competitive environment, and they're not making anything. I mean, they're barely making probably enough to keep doing it. And so my inference is, because I've heard players criticize the PGA Tour for how they don't pay players enough, but like you've got a superstar in the NBA and they make, I'm guessing because I don't really know, like $10 million a year, $20 million a year, $25 million a year. I mean, I don't know what these, I know that some of the salaries are astronomical, but I don't know what it actually comes out to per year. But, you know, then you got PGA Tour players who would be superstars, and they might make, if they want to make that kind of money, it's they've got to do it through their sponsorships. I mean, you don't make $25 million a year as a superstar on the PGA Tour with winnings. You know, maybe you make $7 million, $8 million a year. But there's just, and some people say, oh, that's a lot of money. Well, sure it is. But I mean, but the PGA Tour is making tens of millions of dollars off of these tournaments and then distributing it to, quote, charities, which you know is just a bunch of lefties sending money to more lefties. It's a big money conduit that they can, you know, have these all these charitables where there's $300,000 salaried executives. And anyway, so the LIV Golf Tour is, you know, there's more money for people to make. The purse money is bigger. And I think some of it's because it's bankrolled by the Saudis. They're paying some of the players. So again, this isn't a statement on the Saudi Arabia or anything like that, but it is a statement on, I love competition. And I think the PGA Tour has some monopolistic, I don't want to say phony shit, but some monopolistic lefty money funneling bullshit going on under the guise of charity and foundations and stuff. And so to see a challenge to that with LIV Golf, I think is phenomenal. And this week they had a tournament in Portland a couple weeks ago. And then this week they had a tournament in Bedminster, New Jersey at Trump National Golf Club. So I think it's super cool. I think that that's, and I'm interested to see as this thing continues to grow, like, cause things that I hate, like big media, big tech, big sports, cause these, whether it's the NBA, they're all just a bunch of lefty woke bastards. I mean, hell, we got to pay for their stadiums, NFL stadiums, NBA arenas. We, the taxpayers, pay for that. So they can turn around and pay their players $25 million a year. It's just, I hate everything about it. It's not a free market. It's not, you know, don't get me wrong. If it was a free market, professional athletes would still make millions of dollars a year. But maybe instead of $35 million a year, they make $19 million a year, and then their owners have to pay for their own arenas and pay for their own stadiums instead of sucking off the taxpayer teeth for these things. That I hate professional sports leagues for that reason. So I'm just totally rooting for LIV Golf. You can watch them on YouTube. It's free. If you're a golf fan, check them out. I don't know if they have tournaments every Sunday, but like today they had a tournament. They do it different than they use like these team formats and only three rounds. It's cool. And I'm totally rooting for LIV Golf to do really well. And I tried to do my part by watching it live today on YouTube. And I hope that more people do. And I hope that it grows. And I hope that just like I hope that there's a challenge to face monopolistic fascist dominance. Again, I call them Facebook, fascist book. I hope there's a challenge to fascist books, monopolistic dominance. I hope there's a challenge to the PGA Tour's monopolistic practices. I hope there's a, you know, I just, again, for me, it's freedom. That's why this topic made the show, Live Golf. I think it's still about freedom and free markets and, you know, and not to say that Live Golf is a bunch of, and the people behind it are a bunch of angels. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I love a challenge to the a competition and free markets and free will makes everything better, in my opinion. So speaking of competition, we've got a competition going here in Wisconsin for the Wisconsin gubernatorial election, currently primary season. You know, I just decided this week I was leaning. I was a Kevin Nicholson supporter. Well, first I was a Tim. Give me my backstory here. The day that Tim Rantham announced for governor, I donated $500 and contacted his campaign asking how I could help as president of Wisconsin Kerry. Because what said it to me was that Tim Rantham, he stood up to Robin Voss. He was willing to buck the Republican establishment in Wisconsin, and the Republican establishment in Wisconsin, the elected Republicans, are the reason that we don't have more freedom in Wisconsin right now. Kevin Nicholson was campaigning as an outsider. I supported Kevin in the Senate primary back in 2018, I believe it was, over Leah Vukmir. I think Kevin Nicholson would have done much, much, much better in the primary, in the general election against Tammy Baldwin. But so Kevin Nicholson is an outsider. He promises to govern like an outsider. He promises to buck leadership. But Tim Rantham did it. Tim Rantham was elected to office, and he bucked Robin Voss, and for that reason, he proved his cred to me. He proved he's willing to do right by people, do right by the citizens. Unfortunately, I just, and I started to get disappointed in Tim's campaign right away. I mean, I reached out to him. And I said, hey, do you know anybody up at the Isaac Walton League? Wisconsin Kerry does free concealed carry classes up there. I'd love to hook you up with some people, you know, go up there and meet. You can meet a few hundred people speaking to one of their meetings and really get some good networking going, and didn't get back to me. I've heard from other people, some in conservative talk radio, that they reached out to Tim to come on the radio, and he didn't respond. And so people were trying to give him some help, and he didn't take advantage of it. So that's disappointing that Tim Rantham didn't get more traction. I thought that Mike Lindell was going to bankroll. Because Mike Lindell came down for Tim's announcement, his announcement of his candidacy. And then I thought, you know, we'd see Tim Rantham on the TV and on radio with some commercials. And then if he got some traction, I thought we'd see Trump endorsing Tim Rantham. Unfortunately, Tim never got any traction. And everybody went down to try to get Trump's endorsement. Well, then Tim Michaels gets in the race and Tim Michaels gets Trump's endorsement. But but my order of preference was Tim Rantham and then Kevin Nicholson. And then, of course, Kevin Nicholson drops out 2 weeks ago. So now we're down to essentially Rebecca Clefishy and Tim Michaels. The things that I don't like about Tim Michaels is that, I think it's a risk that he's a coastie. He lived in New York, Connecticut for the past, 10, 12 years. And he's like, oh, that was for my family. I believe that he's always maintained his legal residence in Wisconsin. He's like, I always paid my taxes in Wisconsin. Well, of course you always paid your taxes in Wisconsin, because I'm sure taxes in Wisconsin are cheaper than taxes in New York or taxes in Connecticut. So of course you would want to, it would behoove you to want to maintain your Wisconsin residency, even though you were, the reason that he moved out east was to run something for Michael's corporation that he's the president of. But, you know, his family lives out there. I guess he also moved out there for some medical treatments for one of his kids, his daughter or something. That they had a hospital out there that was, but he's, you know, living out there. His family lives out there. They're engrossed in the culture out there. His kids go to schools out there, both high schools and colleges. And, in my opinion, the coasty, the culture out there in the coast is different. And I don't know how different. I mean, I know California and New York are different. California has a lot of conservatives. They're just overwhelmed by the population centers of Los Angeles and just like Illinois. Illinois is a very conservative state in terms of land mass, but dominated by the Chicagoland area where it's all liberal. New York, very conservative state, dominated by the population center of New York City. And then you got, of course, you know, the capital cities are always liberal, whether it's Sacramento for California, Madison for Wisconsin, Albany, New York. You know, you still, Austin, Texas. Texas is a very conservative state, but Austin is a liberal, liberal place. So I don't know the culture intimately out there, but I do know in general the cultures on the coast are even, see, and that's the thing. When there's conservatives that live in liberal areas, they even get a baseline level of progressiveness to them, in my opinion, in my observation. You just, like, even you talk to, okay, I got one for you. You talk to Republicans in Illinois. Illinois has a lot of conservatives. It's a very conservative state. But you talk to Republicans in Illinois, and they're pretty damn squishy on gun issues because Illinois is such a saturation anti-gun state. So you get these states where, I call it firearm owners inferiority complex, FOIC. Gun owners, they get discriminated against for so long, they get a baseline level of self-discrimination. Again, it's an inferiority complex, a baseline level of self-discrimination. And I think the same thing happens with conservatives. Conservatives get an inferiority complex when they're surrounded by liberals. They get very defensive. They forget how to play offense. It just turns into a whole defensive endeavor for them. And they start to believe that the country is, that the path to victory electorally is to run towards the center and be moderate and compromise and that kind of thing. And I don't believe it is. I think Trump showed us the path to victory is to be bold, be for freedom, be for American values. And that there's a constituency out there that thinks that Republicans and Democrats are all the same. And if you tap into that constituency, you will find a victory that you don't have to go chasing the dumbass swing voters. I call them DASVs, those people that are so stupid that some elections they vote for Democrats and some elections they vote for Republicans. And I mean, if you haven't figured out the policy differences that follow you through your party affiliation, you're a dumbass swing voter. And too often Republicans think that appealing to those swing voters is how you win. And Trump proved that you don't have to appeal to those swing voters, which tends to be like the suburban soccer moms. And Trump proved that you can go build your own constituency in rural areas and from even hardworking blue collar folks in suburban and urban areas who still embrace American values and are tired of, they're turned off by Republicans who were just Democrat light. And so Republicans keep trying to win being Democrat light when the real path to victory is being conservative. The real path to victory is being pro-America, pro-freedom, which I believe mirrors conservatism. And you can find a constituency and a loyal following of people who, you know, didn't really probably vote that much before. So anyway, so you got the Wisconsin gubernatorial debate. You've got Kevin Nicholson, who was my second choice after Tim Rantham, and he didn't, he dropped out of the race. So now you're down to Michaels and Clefish. And again, Tim Michaels, my downs for him is that he's spent a lot of time on the coast, especially in the last decade. And I wonder how that has impacted his worldview, because it's a saturation liberal environment out there, and he runs in some highfalutin circles, and that's a concern of mine. My concern with Rebecca Clefish is she's Rebecca Clefish. She's been part of the Walker Mist. Look, Scott Walker, Act 10, phenomenal. I had a magnetic bumper sticker that said, Scott Walker is my hero. I mean, I thought he was fantastic. during Act 10. And even so fantastic that when he poo-pooed constitutional carry in 2011, after he was elected, and after through his campaign manager, Keith Gilkes, who became his chief of staff, said that, oh, if you can get constitutional carry to Scott's desk, he'll sign it. Well, then when we got it to the floor of the Senate, Scott Walker goes on TV and says, hey, anything that makes it to my desk must have mandatory training in the permit. And then constitutional carry was out the door. And so Scott Walker totally sold us out on constitutional carry back in 2011. But he was such a stud for Act 10. You know, I cut him a pass in my mind. Excuse me, I've got a dry throat here. I didn't bring a bottle of water to the studio. So don't have time to run across the house to the kitchen to get it. But Rebecca Clefish, the biggest issue we've had for years is that we elect Republicans, and it's not just the gun issue, it's all kinds of things. You elect Republicans, and then they don't act like Republicans once they get elected. The reason they don't is because they perceive that the most important thing for any elected official is to win re-election. And when Republicans get elected, and then they start getting engulfed in the political structure, wherever that is, if it's in the legislature, if it's as governor, with the influence of the media, and then the detachment from their constituencies, they start to believe that the path to victory is pleasing the media, pleasing, you know, don't do something that gets you criticized in the 5 o'clock news, running to the center. They get much, much more contact, much, much more activism, much, much more lobbying from the lefties, the progressives, than they do from freedom. Freedom has a very small representation in Madison. There's no lobbyist out there lobbying for freedom. There's lobbyists lobbying for big companies. There's lobbyists lobbying for trade organizations, but there's no one out there lobbying for freedom, for smaller government, or very, very, very few. I mean, there might be a few entities that you could say, oh, they've got, you know, they're, but it's very, very limited. So Rebecca Clefish has been a politician. And then the reason that we get nothing from politicians is because politicians don't have the balls to stand up to the media. They let the media dictate. They follow the media agenda. They don't play offense. They play defense. They're so afraid of the media. They're so afraid of bad press that they let themselves get chided and bullied and coerced into compromising away our freedoms. Some do it quicker than others, some full on cave in, and some just slowly acquiesce and in the names of compromise and things like that. And that's where, and I could be wrong, but Scott Walker, second term Scott Walker, he sold us out on right to work. He said right to work was a distraction. Let me rephrase. Scott Walker said right to work was a distraction. There was supposed to be an Act 10 Part 2. He never put that forward. He had to be begged not to take the Medicaid expansion of Obamacare because he was originally going to take that. I mean, just Scott Walker was not very conservative after Act 10. And don't get me wrong, Act 10 was among some of the greatest legislation ever passed in Wisconsin. But Scott Walker was, I think, scared to the center by the Act 10 protests. Or he was just a one-trick pony anyway. Act 10 was all he really had up his sleeve, and then he was just going to try to be Mr., you know, handshake governor, enjoy the perks of the position, and try to settle into the Tommy Thompson pattern of aw shucks all around the state and getting reelected and Mr. Popularity and loved by everybody and big government Republican. And then, of course, Scott Walker, you know, wins his second term and then loses his third term, election for a third term. But Rebecca Clefish was in the legislature. She used to be a news anchor, and she's in the legislature. And she went from legislature to lieutenant governor. And so she's been a part of that Madison establishment that sold us out and continues to sell us out all the time. A couple years ago, she was on TV, totally on board with criminal justice reform, talking about convicts as correctional customers. I mean, just playing the whole woke game. Rebecca Clefish, in my opinion, is just another politician sticks her thumb into the licks her thumb, sticks it into the wind, and tests which way the political winds are blowing. And that's what she, that's where her positions are formed. And she's even done it during this campaign. You know, there's a, this becomes an issue, and oh, I'm gonna call for the resignation of John Chisholm after, you know, we have what happened in Waukesha. And it's just, you know, she's just an opportunist, in my observation. And I think that if she was elected, you know, she's endorsed by Robin Voss. Robin Voss is with Scott Walker, blocked every substantive gun bill that we put forward in the last decade, blocked constitutional carry back in 2011, blocked school grounds carry two, three times since. Scott Fitzgerald had a hand in that, but it was leadership. It was Fitzgerald, Voss, and Walker who didn't want these substantive gun bills that Wisconsin carry and many others tried to usher through legislature. So that's why I'm not supporting Rebecca Clefish. My hesitations about Tim Michaels are that he's a coastie and that he's going to be influenced by that cultural exposure. He says the only person that influences me is my wife. Well, yeah, that's great, but your wife lives in Connecticut or in New York area, and she's probably goes to country clubs with all the big blue blood liberals out there, and is probably afraid to have them looking down their nose at her. And so, yeah, so I have reservations about Tim Michaels as well. But that's what we're left with. Tim Rantham has got no traction. So you got Tim Michaels and Rebecca Clefish, and I'm 95% sure Rebecca Clefish will sell us down the road for her political future. And Tim Michaels, I mean, I give him 60-40. I give him a 60% belief that he'll be the ball buster conservative that his commercials make him out to be, and 40% chance. But again, Rebecca Clefish, I give it like a 95% chance she's going to be another go along to get along Republican. You know, yeah, maybe she goes along and supports constitutional carry. I kind of doubt it. How could she buck Robin Voss when Robin Voss is endorsing her? And I mean, if Becky Clefish gets elected, I think Robin Voss continues to be the most powerful Republican in the state. I'm just being honest. And I hope I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I mean, I'm going to vote for Becky in the general election if she wins the gubernatorial primary. But anyway, that's where I stand. I'm a Tim Michaels supporter at this point, donated money to his campaign last week, put his campaign sign in my yard this week. I would have been enthusiastic for Rantham. I would have been enthusiastic for Nicholson. I'm tepid for Michaels, but I'm convinced Michaels is the better choice for me than Rebecca Clefishy. But we had WISN had their gubernatorial debate this last man, my childhood speech impediment is rearing its ugly head. I used to turn my R's into W's when I was a kid. The gubernatorial debate was this last Wednesday. Dan O'Donnell on WISN had a debate for him. First off, they call it a debate. It's not a debate. There was nothing about that. There was a debate. Dan O'Donnell called himself a moderator. He was not a moderator. He was more like an MC for the talking point presentation. And I get that mainstream TV, like, you know, the presidential debates, those aren't debates. They're put on by like the Presidential Commission on Debates. It's a joke. And I know those, the candidates have like rules that they hammer out between the two campaigns. One of the rules is that the candidates can't ask each other questions. That's something I've heard in the past from these presidential debates. But for WISN's gubernatorial primary debate, I don't know that there was any of those. Maybe there was. Maybe I was going to ask. I had that as a question for Dan O'Donnell. Is there any rules that the candidates all agreed to for this in order to take part in this debate or not? But it wasn't a debate, because a debate, you would have candidates debating each other, and the moderator would be there if things get out of hand, if they start arguing and it's not being productive, it's being cyclical, if it's not moving along. That's what a moderator would do. They would moderate a debate between two candidates. But Dan O'Donnell was not a moderator. He was the MC of the, and he would ask the questions, but he would ask different questions of each candidate. And that's fine. He said the reason he does that is because if you ask the same candidate everything, all you get is talking points. But he didn't. There was very little debate, and so for that reason, I think calling it a debate is a misnomer, and calling him a moderator is a misnomer. He was the MC of a talking point presentation. Again, I know why mainstream TV news doesn't do real debates. I just hope the WISN would, but I was disappointed. They should have let the candidates go at it. Put a topic out there and let the candidates go at it. And then if Dan O'Donnell, if it starts to get heated, then that's when the moderator can come in and moderate things. Say, okay, we're going to move on. Okay, we're going to do this. Okay, 30 seconds for you. Okay, a minute for you. You can just when things get heated, because that's how a real debate, you keep it from deteriorating into, just a big old argument. But disappointing things, Rebecca Clefish, she never gets pressed on anything. The whole tone, the whole, I guess, the field position of this race, they've allowed, and this is why Rebecca Clefish is such a skilled politician, is her and her team have dictated the talking points in this election. And what are the talking points? Oh, the talking points are that Tim Michaels was on the board of a trade organization that wanted to raise the gas tax in Wisconsin. Like, really, that's what we're going to elect a governor based upon, or select a Republican based upon this phony gas tax topic. So it's either Tim. So the discussion is either Tim Michaels is somehow part of a gas tax raiser consortium, or he's not. But there's no discussion about Rebecca Clefish and the skeletons in her closet, like the fact that she was all into criminal justice reform when that was trendy to do. How convicts were correctional customers. But oh, now she's going to be tough on crime. No discussion of some of the stuff that Rebecca Clefish said about Kenosha and about the police officers in Kenosha and how she was disturbed by what she saw from the police officer right after it happened and how shooting someone so many times in the back was wrong. See, Clefish isn't getting pressed There was no. There was a big portion of the WISN gubernatorial debate that focused around Tim Michaels and whether he did or didn't support raising the gas tax. But whether he did or didn't, that's what the discussion was all about. There was no discussion about whether Rebecca Clefish did or didn't throw police under the bus in Kenosha. It's just amazing how even WISN is just, they treat Rebecca Clefish with kid gloves. And they'll say they don't, but they do. And they don't even realize it because, again, if Rebecca Clefish got the same treatment that Tim Michaels did, we would have been a topic of the debate from WISN would have been, hey, Becky, you opened your big mouth down about Kenosha, and turns out that the officer was justified in what he did. Do you regret what you said? How can you say you support police when you were right there to throw them under the bus? But that wasn't, it's not just what gets discussed, it's what doesn't get discussed that shows the bias here. And what doesn't get discussed is all this questionable, all the things that would give you pause about Rebecca Clefish. Even if you didn't want to get into the subjects of how politically established Republicans sell us out over and over and over and over. They spend a little bit of time in office and they get more interested in re-election. They get more interested in being influenced by, the media and by someone, but it ain't by we the people. It ain't by the constituency that got them elected. And that's a remarkable pattern over and over. And maybe it's because, and it's just amazing to me how that isn't that's the whole reason that this whole outsider label has such cachet. But we don't talk about that. In the debate, they didn't have any discussion of that, about what really allows someone to go in and govern as an outsider. What are the influences that keep people from, that keep Republicans that get elected from being more conservative? What are those influences that start to work on Republicans once they're in office to keep them from being conservative like they campaigned as? That hasn't been any part of the discussion, and it's not part of talk radio, not just the debate on Wednesday, but it's just not part of their discussion. There was one question in that debate, quote debate, on the Second Amendment. And I get it, Dan O'Donnell doesn't. This is on WISN's debate last Wednesday. Dan O'Donnell doesn't own guns, doesn't hunt, not a Second Amendment guy. That's been evident for years. But so he asked for questions the day before to ask the candidate. So I emailed him a question. And the question that I emailed Dan O'Donnell, hell, I got it right here. I'll pull it up for you guys. The question that I emailed Dan O'Donnell for the debate was, where is it? Oops, that's the wrong email. Okay. Questions for the debate on the Second Amendment. This is what I emailed to Dan O'Donnell. Constitutional carry / school grounds carry / gun rights. Wisconsin's gun-free school zone law makes it a felony if a licensed concealed carry holder drives onto school grounds and forgets to unload and encase their handgun, even though the federal gun-free school zone law allows concealed carry license holders to carry on school grounds. This exposes hundreds of thousands of Wisconsin parents and guardians to accidental felonies. Question. Three times during the Walker Klefisch administration, school grounds carry and constitutional carry was in front of the legislature, and each time Scott Walker publicly dismissed the legislation. All of you campaign as pro-gun and pro-Second Amendment, but will any of you publicly commit to championing school grounds carry and constitutional carry if elected governor? That would be a fucking phenomenal question to ask of these candidates. Because that would, for everybody that says, oh, they all have the same positions, getting a candidate to commit to school grounds carry, constitutional carry would be newsworthy, noteworthy, something that primary voting Republicans would be very interested in. That's a great question, if I do say so myself, a great question that would have been, and I emailed that to Dan at 11:06 a.m. on July 26th, which was, it was like a day before the debate. Here's the question that Dan O'Donnell put nothing about the Second Amendment, and the Second Amendment's an area where I think Republicans diverge significantly. All right, so someone's in the chat here says, I called, can I ask about this stuff? Yeah, definitely. If you want to talk about the Republican or anything I've talked about, yeah, I saw a call coming in, and it was an area code not from Wisconsin, so I figured it was just either a Blog Talk at spam caller. So yeah, if you want to talk about anything here, let me grab my headset here and take this. I got a minute or two we can put you on for. Sack of Pine Cones is the name here. And welcome to Well-Armed Radio.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, my name's Sean. So you're talking,
Sean, where
about
are you calling from?
Wisconsin, California. I'm a natural liberal. I'm just like really curious though about what you're talking about.
Yeah, about which topic here?
So you're talking about gun regulation, right?
The most recent thing I just mentioned was school grounds carry, constitutional carry.
Yeah, so like teachers should have guns in schools, yeah.
So have you been listening to the show? Because I didn't bring up, the answer to your question is yes, I think teachers should be. Not all teachers. I think that the solution to school shootings is to arm some teachers. Correct. Yes, that's what I believe.
Oh, sorry, maybe I didn't hear you correctly. I thought that's what you were going for in general.
Yeah, but I haven't brought that up tonight on the show, so that's why I was curious. You on the topic,
oh,
you said you called. You
oh, maybe I misheard. I just heard you say like schools.
Oh, school grounds carry. Got it. Oh, okay, I got you. So school grounds carry, that's, I got
you. The Wisconsin new bill, right? Yeah.
Well, so what it is here in Wisconsin, if you drive onto, in Wisconsin we have concealed carry. You get your license, you can conceal carry. If you are concealed carrying in your...
Oh, it's like a bar law, like you can't be close enough to a school or something.
Yeah,
like that.
If you drive onto school grounds...
it's not going to help anything.
If you drive onto school grounds with a gun in your car, you're a felon in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's not going to help anything though, right?
What's not going to help anything?
Like that regulation is not going to help anything.
Well, right now, I'm a concealed carry license holder.
It's like saying you can't sell alcohol.
If I want to go pick up, if I want to go pick up my kids from school, and I forget to unload my gun and put it in a case before I drive onto the school parking lot to pick them up, I'm committing a felony.
You're a felon. Yeah.
Well, if you get caught,
not
going to
actually prevent. It's not going to prevent school shootings though, because those people are like armed and intense and planned out, right?
So if I drive onto school grounds and I get an offender vendor and the cops come and they're like, oh, do you have any guns in the vehicle? And you're like, oh, yeah, then you're screwed. So we have a, so I could lose my freedom to you could lose your life to a, to someone if they carjack you and shoot you, or you can lose your freedom to the government if you drive onto school grounds forgetting to unload your gun. So what we are pushing, what Wisconsin Carry has pushed for 10 years here in Wisconsin is to, the federal gun-free school zone law says, hey, if you're a licensed concealed carry holder, you can have a gun in your vehicle. You can drive on the school grounds. Can't take it in the school. But when you're going to pick up your kids,
positive.
You can have a gun.
It's positive then. Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense. Like, if you're a licensed concealed carry person, like my grandfather, you should be able to drive and pick up your kid with a
right.
gun in your
right.
carry.
And so, yeah. Right. So, like, but if I call, like, my kids, well, they're my fiance's kids, but I call my kids. If I call their grandparents and say, because they have their concealed carry too, and I say, hey, can you pick up the kids today? If they forget to unload their, because they carry for self-defense, because we got a lot of carjackings here in Wisconsin, a lot of carjackings in Milwaukee.
So but, you're in a state where you can just like open carry?
Well, we can open carry in Wisconsin, yeah. I open carry all the time. But they can, I mean, most people conceal carry.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I see. So it's like the natural way to do it. And they can't, so they're going to be fucked if they get in any sort of accident or any sort of bullshit.
Yeah,
they're felons.
Yeah, I'll give you an example because this has happened. There's a guy, he's a teacher. And so in Wisconsin, when you're on school grounds, you have to unload your gun and put it in a case if you drive on school grounds. So like, let's say if your day starts and ends with dropping off your kids at school, you got to make sure you unload your gun before. So if you don't want to get carjacked on the way to school, you want to be protected, you got your loaded gun with you. Then before you get to the school grounds, before you pull onto school grounds, you got to unload it. Like either pull over the side of the road, while you're driving, unholster your gun, unload it. And like, think about that. Think about pulling over on a street a block away from the school and pulling out your gun from its holster to unload it and put it in a case and put it.
It looks like you're going to do a
right.
school shooting
it looks
or some
like you're
bullshit
gonna, yeah.
like that. Yeah,
so,
it's ridiculous.
So would,
and it's not
going
to prevent anybody that is like actually intentionally going to do that. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah. School grounds carry isn't going to, I mean, we're not talking about stopping. I want to arm teachers to stop school shootings, but school grounds carry has nothing to do with school shootings. I'm not proposing that if you let, when the parents are picking up and dropping off their kids, cause they got a gun in the car, then if there's a school shooter, the parents can go in and save the day. Like, no, I mean that I'm just trying to
in that direction because you mentioned the teacher.
Yeah. Okay. So this teacher that was carrying, he had a gun unloaded like he was supposed to in his center console. And he gave another teacher a ride home from school. And the teacher asked for a piece of gum.
And he saw it and ratted on him?
Yeah. And so the other teacher saw, so he's like, here, I got a piece of gum in my center console. Opens the center console. And the other teacher says, oh, you got a gun in there? And he's like, yeah, that's legal. And so then the other teacher that he gave a ride to, in school a month or something later, gets caught with pot. And so the teacher says, well, Phil's got a gun in his car and he's not in trouble. And so then they call Phil in the office. I don't know. His name was Jared.
It doesn't matter.
Hmm.
I just want to hear the story.
Yeah. So then
unless
Jared,
you have a
so
link
call,
or something to post.
So, if you Google it, Jared Keen, K-U-E-H-N. So Jared says, they call him in the office, said, Jared, do you have a gun in your car? And he goes, yeah. Can we see it? He goes, sure. So he takes him out and shows it to him. It's unloaded in the center console. They arrest him, perp walk him. Wisconsin Carry, the group that I'm the president of, we funded his defense, and our attorney got the charges dropped. But, again, that's the kind of thing that could happen. So, like, I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry. I got a lot of people that I make mad because we sue people. I do open records requests against school districts. I'm also, I founded the New Berlin Taxpayers Alliance, and the school district superintendent can't stand me because, so like if I drive on school grounds, I could totally see the guy saying to the, calling the cops saying, hey, you know, Nick's the president of Wisconsin, Kerry. We should see if he's got a loaded gun in his vehicle because he comes on school grounds all the time. So that's the reason that.
Yeah, because it's your rhetoric. So they just like know to
yeah,
look. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So it could be any number of ways that a person could get, you could get ratted out by someone like, but like you, or you, again, you just forget. Like there's been times I'm driving my daughters, I'm running late, driving my daughter's basketball game. And I'm like, gosh, shit. Cause I have three guns in my truck. So I'm like, unload in case, unload in case, driving with my knees on the steering wheel. And it's, so that's what we're talking about, school grounds carry. Three times we've had
that's
school grounds
though,
carry.
That's crazy, though, because it, like, it hinders your ability to defend yourself if something happens.
Yeah, and three times we've had that legislation.
Like, where you have to, like, load your clip, like, when somebody's robbing you or whatever?
Well, right, that's the, and that's what's so stupid. So I got these moms from, like, the inner city of Milwaukee who, like, they're literally worried about getting carjacked every day, and they drive their kids to school, and they drive onto the little turnaround to drop them off. And then they're like, Nick, am I committing a felony? If I'm like, yeah, before you get to the school. So these people live in high crime neighborhoods would essentially have to leave their gun at home because they don't want to stop outside the school and unload their gun and then have someone see them and call the police and say, hey, this car, red Pontiac. What's a Pontiac? I don't even know.
Grand Am.
Red Pontiac Grand Am. Yeah, there's a lady with a gun in her hand, and all of a sudden the SWAT team's there. I mean, so that's how stupid this is. So three times we've had legislation to the floor of, or legislation to, it was the floor of the Senate, and three times the Republicans in Wisconsin, who are supposed to be pro-gun, killed it. And so now we've got.
Why are the Republicans killing it?
Because they're just not that pro-gun.
They don't want anybody to have guns either.
But they, these guys, that's why they.
So why is it like a? Why is it like a? Like in the general, like social rhetoric, why is it like a pro-gun stance for Republicans?
Like, why are Republicans pro-gun?
Yeah, I know maybe like the people in office might not be, but like in general, the populace is.
So, well,
like
first of all,
like an unhealthy degree, though.
Well, so I don't think there's an unhealthy degree of being pro-gun, but in Wisconsin, so this is why I think it's not just a Republican thing. I talked to, because Wisconsin Carry, we do free concealed carry classes, and I mean, our classes, like I go to
like
some of them.
Gun safety?
So people can get their concealed carry license because you have to have a proof of training in order to get your concealed carry. So Wisconsin Carry does free training. So we get a lot of people from the inner city and Milwaukee County, a lot of people there, over half of the classes are non-Caucasian, over half the classes are female. And so like, I mean, I'll go around the class. I don't teach the classes. I certify instructors teach classes, but I go around and I'll say, hey, you know, just, I can tell you these are not Republican voters. They're Democrats.
Like vulnerable people, basically.
Yeah. Well, people live in high crime areas. Like you want to be pro-gun, live in a high crime area. You'll be pro-gun. So it's not a Republican thing. Because if I would say most Republicans,
the rhetoric is just crafted, basically, right?
Well, the media would have you believe that it's a Republican Democrat issue, but I'm telling you, like, here's a perfect example. In Wisconsin, we had a referendum in 1998 on the ballot statewide to amend our constitution. So it's kind of like Wisconsin has its own version of the Second Amendment in our constitution. And so for that to go into the state constitution, it had to go to a statewide ballot. So a statewide referendum. And in that statewide referendum, this is what the question said. It said, should Wisconsin's constitution be amended to state that Wisconsin residents have the right to keep and bear arms for security, defense, hunting, recreation, and any other lawful purpose? Do you agree? And if you agree, then it passes. Well, 74.3% of the state in 1998 agreed with that statement. So that tells me that 74...
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, and I would say that now it would only be more pro-gun. Because
you're
like
60, right?
I would say it'd be more like probably 80% of people would, because if in 1998, 74.3% of people supported that pro-gun statement to put it in Wisconsin's
constitution.
Was that before
Columbine?
Well, Columbine was 99.
Can't remember. 99. Oh, so right before.
It was 1 year before. But since then.
That's like the counterpoint for gun rights. Yeah.
Yeah, but
like
think about
school shootings
mass
shootings in general.
But if you look at across the country, like concealed carry, there's this GIF that shows how concealed carry has grown, and then it's constitutional carry has grown. So like in 1985 there was like three states that had concealed carry laws, and then by like 1992 it was like 17 states, and then by like 1995
it was
like 20 states.
Was it like background checks or whatever? I mean, everybody talks about background checks or mental health checks.
It varies by state.
But the general theme of them must be like a hindrance to getting a gun quickly, basically.
Okay, you're kind of jumping all over the place. You're jumping around. It's hard for me to follow what I was making the point that let me finish real quick. So if 74% of the people in 1998 supported the right to carry, when carry in general wasn't even popular nationwide. Now, like all 50 states have concealed carry laws that allow concealed carry. So I would argue that it's only got to be more, the right to carry, right to keep our arms, has got to be more popular now. So if 74% of the people in 1998 supported this right, I would guess it's probably closer to 80% now that support the right. Just a guess.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you were saying that they were getting more opposed to the idea, not more for it.
No, I'd say more. But anyway,
Sorry.
I got to wrap it up here, so I got a few things left to do the show. But I appreciate the call from California. I try to broadcast every Sunday night, so if you catch a future show, definitely love to have you on.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for chatting with me, man.
Have a good
interesting
one.
Conversation.
Yeah, have a good night. So great to have a caller there from. I'd apologize. I would have taken the call sooner. I just sometimes. On Blog Talk, you get spam calls, and so Wisconsin's gubernatorial debate. So that was the question that I asked about constitutional carry. And here's the question that Dan O'Donnell on WISN actually ends up asking the three candidates. He says, "What does the Second Amendment mean to you?" He asked it to each candidate. I'm like, are you kidding? What a generic, softball, squishy, what is this? Fifth grade, what does voting mean to you? What does America mean to you? I mean, that was the question that Dan O'Donnell asked of the Wisconsin Republican gubernatorial candidates. When he's got a great question that could deal with actual legislation that could come in front of the next governor, the next Republican governor, doesn't want to do that. And again, maybe Dan didn't see. I think Dan sees the emails because I emailed Dan. I talked to Dan from time to time, and I'm pretty confident he gets my emails and read that email. So yeah, he just threw out that little generic, what does the Second Amendment mean to you? What is this? That's so elementary. Clee Fishy started with, it's our hunting heritage and sporting heritage. I mean, talk radio during this Republican primary process, multiple hosts have said that their role is, and they've used this term that they don't want people to get hagadorned for people that, outside, Brian Hagedorn campaigned as a conservative to get elected to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and then now is really sided with the liberals like 75% of the time. So these talk show hosts are saying, we want people to really understand these candidates so they don't get Hagedorn, so we don't end up with a candidate who's not really conservative when they get in office. So these talk radio hosts, they say their role is for people to not get Hagedorned, and yet they have issues to delve into to test and temper the true differences in how candidates will be in office, not on the campaign trail, and they don't delve into them. Because I've said this before, these politicians, they campaign like they're the second coming of Charlton Heston, but then during legislative session, they tuck tail, make excuses, and run from gun bills like as fast as they possibly can. Not all of them, but most of them. And I can say on the gun issue, since I know it so well, that if talk radio thinks that discussion, what does the Second Amendment mean to you? If they think that discussion will prevent anyone from getting hagadorned, they're naive at best and arrogant and egotistical at worst. I mean, it just, and so I know the gun issue super well. I'm thinking there's got to be people that are listening to the governor's debate. Like, okay, I got one, abortion. Like, abortion is a hot topic. And right now, abortion is banned in Wisconsin. So legislation that could get introduced in the future might be to say that to legalize abortion for the first 12 weeks or something. Now, we've got a Republican Senate and a Republican Assembly, and maybe that no legislation could get introduced. But I would say if anything gets introduced, it's certainly not going to be I don't see any will for the legislature to like do like a Colorado or like a California or New York style pro-abortion bill. But asking the candidates to delve into some differences in the candidates, like to say to the candidates, hey, well, I mean, what if there's some kind of legal, a state legal challenge to the state's abortion ban from 1860, whatever, and that gets overturned, and then there is no bill in Wisconsin. So Wisconsin has to pass a bill regarding abortion because now it's a state issue. Dan O'Donnell didn't ask any of the candidates about abortion. And I mean, I've said this before on the show. I'll say it again. I'll tell you where I sit on abortion. I think abortion is reprehensible, immoral, and illegal late term. If you're okay with aborting an 8-month-old baby, you're reprehensible. I'll just say it. I think that's ogreish. I think if I was king of Wisconsin and I could pass the law, I would say abortion would be legal, not moral, not ethical, but legal up until viability, whatever that is, if that's 12 weeks or 14 weeks or whatever, legal till viability and illegal after viability. Not because abortion is right or wrong, because that's between you and your God, but we're talking about legal and illegal. And so that could be a question that, I mean, I don't know that these candidates all, like, what if Wisconsin's 1860 ban on abortion gets a legal challenge in the Wisconsin Supreme Court and overturned, thrown out, then the legislature would presumably take up the issue. WISN didn't ask any of the candidates about that. So it's just, there's so many ways that talk radio could have really gotten into some red meat on these Republicans, no pun intended, red, but Rebecca Clefish, she gets a pass on negative campaigning. When Mark Newman negative campaigned against Scott Walker, everybody was up in arms. And so no one has taken Clefishy to task for negative campaigning. All the talk show hosts, we hope this campaign doesn't get negative. Scott Walker is getting credit for right to work as a hallmark of the Walker administration. And Becky Clefish is just hitching her train to the Scott Walker wagon on right to work. When Scott Walker said over and over that right to work was a distraction, and some conservatives in the legislature had to push right to work and prevailing wage to the chagrin of leadership. So nobody asked Rebecca Clefish about that, because that would highlight some of the differences in these Republican candidates. So really disappointing. Talk radio, they should just stay out of the Republican primaries, because they do a terrible job on them. You know, and that's been the case going back to Lukemire Nicholson primary. It's just something Republican talk. I think talk radio should stay out of. Oh yeah, it's 5 minutes left in the show here. So a couple things. Uvalde, you've probably all seen it by now. The video from inside the school of the Uvalde shooting. You know, you got cops looking at their cell phones using hand sanitizer while children were still being shot in the classroom. You got a young girl calling from the classroom 4 times to 911. Cops were outside the classroom. She died. Others in the classroom bled to death from gunshot wounds that they would have survived. This is in news reports that there was many students died from gunshot wounds that they would have survived if they'd have got quick medical treatment. And that's the same thing that happened in the Oak Creek Temple. I talked about this in the show a couple weeks ago. Oak Creek, the cop outside the Oak Creek Temple, the Sikh Temple shooting back in 2012 or whatever, got shot 13 times. He lived. There was people inside the Sikh temple that got shot 1 time in the leg, and they bled to death and died because no one went in for an hour and a half, 2 hours. They bled to death. So, you know, it's just, it's just more proof that you're the only one you can count on for your self-defense. And the only person that you can count on to act in their self-defense is the person under attack. When you're under attack, you don't have the opportunity to set up a perimeter and, you know, call in a hostage negotiator. You know, I guess that's supposedly the mistake they made in Uvalde. They were treating it like a hostage situation instead of like a active shooter situation. 400 cops responded to the school in Uvalde, Texas, and they stood around and they looked at their cell phones and they used hand sanitizer while kids continued to be murdered. But yet, look at Indiana. A couple weeks ago, 22-year-old concealed carry license holder in Indiana did what 400 cops couldn't do. This is the CCL holder in Indiana that stopped a mass shooter at the mall in Indiana. And do you think that, mass shootings being all the topic of news media in the last month with Uvalde, with what happened in New York, then how do we stop these? Well, then you got a mass shooting that was stopped in Indiana. And do you think that given all the histrionics about mass shootings, you would think that when a mass shooting was stopped by a concealed carry license holder, all the news would want to be doing stories about that? Because now after Uvalde, Texas, there was all the news stations in Milwaukee want to do local angle stories on Uvalde, Texas. After a mass shooting is stopped in Indiana, do you think that local Milwaukee television media, Wisconsin television media, would want to do local angles? Because, I mean, hey, Wisconsin's got a concealed carry license law. Could concealed carry license holders in Wisconsin stop mass shootings here? I mean, there's a ton of local angles, but nope. Television news, mainstream news, mainstream media, they only do mass shooting stories in the context of pushing for gun control. And see, conservative media needs to do a better job with this because conservative media is so eager to play defense, so eager to debunk gun control attacks. But they should be leading with this story. With this, that story from Indiana, they should, even the local, they should have had that on over and over, the local conservative talk radio. I mean, it just, but they're so used because when the Democrats start talking about gun control, the conservative talk media will talk about gun control and debunk gun control. But that's playing defense. But here you've got a 22-year-old in Indiana who stops. They should be doing stories on that. They should be diving into this. This was a 22-year-old. He didn't have a whole bunch of special training. He was, from what I understand, took this shooter out from quite a distance with a pistol. It's a great story for pro-gun folks, and you'd think conservative talk media would want to push that, play a little offense. Nope. Speaking of conservative talk radio, just a couple thoughts as I banged my head against the radio the other morning. You know, there's all these callers to conservative talk radio in Milwaukee, and just we're going to lose the feed here in about – I got about 90 seconds of my live feed here left, and everything else is just going to be caught on the podcast. You can catch the rest of the podcast. So for the live listeners, you're going to lose me in about a minute here. The live feed's going to drop. This is my last topic, conservative talk radio here in Milwaukee. There's a bunch of callers that say they want Trump's policy without Trump's personality. And I just wish someone would at least float the idea that on talk radio, that Trump's personality delivered a victory where others with Trump's policies and supposedly better not deliver a victory. I mean, look at Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney spoke a great game. He was polished. He was professional. He got beat handily by Obama. Scott Walker lost an election he easily should have won in 2018. Was he not the conservative to the core Eagle Scout personality conservative talk radios now claim they want? He lost. So here's my belief, is that Republican primary voters, which is the talk radio audience, they need to stop looking at their world through their own eyes and start looking at the world through the eyes of general election voters. Now, me personally, I'm hoping for a Trump DeSantis ticket myself in 2024. That would be 12 years of swamp busting. Here's my logic. I think Trump struggled the first half of his first term with trying to get good cabinet appointees and advisors. And then he had leakers and swamp creatures. But Trump figured it out, and he would hit the ground running his second term. I think Trump could step into his second term full speed ahead with good people in the right positions. I think DeSantis, Ron DeSantis, could really use 4 years of being the president in waiting to learn from Trump and to establish a loyal team. Trump would be a lame duck president. The minute Trump would be elected, he'd be lame duck president. And so DeSantis could elevate his national name recognition while building a team in D.C. that he could trust. And I'd argue that listeners to talk radio are not the winning audience for a Republican in a general election. And I think that we Republican primary voters should remind ourselves of that. Let's be honest. We who are voting in the Republican primary in Wisconsin, we're voting Republican no matter what. The winning audience for a general election in Wisconsin is not the swing voters. Again, I referred to them earlier in the show as dumbass swing voters, DASVs. Let's face it, if you bounce back and forth between Republican and Democrat, you don't understand policy, and when it comes to policy, you're a dumbass. You might be a smart person. You might be a rocket scientist. But if you bounce back and forth between Republicans and Democrats, you don't understand policy. But Republican primary voters should stop and consider whether Trump's personality is actually the reason he won. Because Trump appealed to a constituency that loves America, but believed that politicians were, you know, all the same, and that voting didn't really matter. And instead of chasing those dumbass swing voters, those soccer moms that voted for Obama, but then they voted for McCain, and that, you know, went back and forth, Trump found a bigger and more loyal, more vocal, and more enthusiastic constituency in those non-urban, non-suburban, rural, pro-America folks. And that's the reason that I can drive through the Northern Kettle Moraine here in Wisconsin and see a guy who painted his barn pro-Trump. And I've said this in the show before, but what does a farmer from rural Sheboygan County have in common with a real estate developer from New York? And how does a rural farmer in the middle of nowhere have such enthusiastic love for a billionaire real estate developer from New York? So much so that he paints his barn in support of that guy, Donald Trump, 2 years after an election theft. Because this is 2022. I'm driving through the Northern Kettle Moraine, and I see this guy who's got his barn painted pro-Trump. That's an appeal that no Romney, and honestly no DeSantis in his current brand, is going to. Donald Trump has a constituency and an enthusiastic support base outside of the typical reliable voter. I have high school friends who never expressed support for a politician in their life, I have high school friends who never expressed support for a politician in their life publicly, whose social media, prior to me getting banned from Facebook, was flooded with pro-Trump posts. Again, these aren't suburban soccer moms. They're non-urban, non-suburban voters who weren't all that reliable voters. Even if they did, went to vote, they were not enthusiastic voters to get their wives and their kids and their friends to polls too. But Trump not only got them to the polls, he endeared themselves to him in a huge way, you know, bigly, if you will. So Trump's personality might turn off conservative talk radio listeners, but Trump's personality turns on the constituency that we need to join us in the general election. And when loyal Republican and conservatives express angst about Trump's personality and his mean tweets, you know, I always ask them, name one mean tweet from Trump. One. And no one can do it. And honestly, I do what I would do if someone asked me the question I was about to ask, or as lawyers would say, don't ask a question you don't already know the answer to. So I Google Trump mean tweets, and there's nothing. Just some Bane boring stuff that isn't mean at all, and it pales in comparison to the Twitter feeds of elected Democrats, including leadership in D.C. So every time you hear a conservative say that, oh, Trump mean tweets, they're pushing a mainstream media myth. I mean, honestly, the only really offensive thing that Trump actually ever said that I can think of was grab him by the pussy. That was the only offensive thing I think Trump ever actually said. And of course, this conversation is superfluous because, let's be honest, for all the people that are hoping for someone other than Trump in 2024, the nomination is Trump's if he seeks it. Because Trump defeated all the never Trumpism in 2016, and he's going to defeat all the I want Trump's personality without Trump, or I want Trump's policy without Trump's personality this time around in 2024, if he decides to run, and I presume he's going to. But again, I think loyal conservatives should stop being so egocentric in their analysis and start looking at the appeal to the general election voters who love America and who will vote for a candidate that they know will fight for American values. And you know, those voters don't know DeSantis, and they don't trust DeSantis. Yeah, I know we engage Republicans. Oh, DeSantis, he's so much better spoken than Trump. And I'll be honest, I think Ron DeSantis does speak better than Trump. But I don't think DeSantis is a better candidate for 2024 for president than Trump. You know, all these voters who don't know DeSantis, they don't trust DeSantis, and he's just another politician to the people who are working in auto body shops in Hixton, Wisconsin, or delivering for Amazon in Rock County, or shingling a roof in Waupaca, who, you know, they don't watch CNN. They don't even watch Fox News. They don't know who Ron DeSantis is. So, you know, we, loyal Republican primary voters, we shouldn't try so hard to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory with our perfect candidate. If we want to have our cake, conservative policy, and eat it too, polished speaker, we're going to lose general elections like we did the last 6 years in Wisconsin. So that's my comments to all the Republican primary voters who think, oh, I just want Trump's policy without Trump's personality. Dude, Trump's personality delivers general election victories. Ron DeSantis's personality isn't going to deliver general election victories. He just doesn't have the loyal, enthusiastic following that Trump does right now. That's just a fact. So anyway, that was the show today. I went way longer than I anticipated going, but I guess that's what happens when you talk about live golf for a half hour and then you talk about, we had a lot of topics. So it's now midnight. Whatever you guys are, it's midnight on. I was just typing in response to one of the people that was on the chat tonight, but if you're catching this, it's I'm closing out the show. It's now August. Happy August. August 1st, 12:08 a.m. I need to get to bed, and I hope that you guys have a great week, and hopefully maybe do a show next week as well. We'll have to see. I'll make some good notes this week and make sure I got some topics, and but I really want to get back to at least semi-weekly shows, bi-weekly shows. And then by the time winter comes around, I'll get back to a show every Sunday. So thank you guys for tuning in. Excuse me. It's a good thing the show's over because my voice is. So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for calling in. Carry on and be well armed.
Sniper Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.